720 WGN. Hello there. It's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth in for Justin Kaufman tonight. Hello. How are you?
Hello, everybody.
How's it going, Jen B?
It's going well.
Happy Labor Day unto you.
Happy Labor Day unto you as well.
What'd you do?
What did I do today? I took a family walk.
So with the little dog, Pee-wee Horton.
And my husband, Miles Horton, we went to a park and we walked, and it was beautiful. And it was also the first time we took Pee-wee Horton to a large park, and he did well. He only growled and barked at one human out of five.
Did that human deserve it?
Probably.
Because sometimes dogs know who's a big jerk.
Pee-wee Horton doesn't like hats because you can't see people's faces.
You know, I stopped to pet a little dog in the neighborhood the other day, and the lady was like, she doesn't, no, we don't do hats. And I was like, oh, my bad, because I had a ball cap on. I was like,
yeah, ball caps. It's just because for Pee-wee, either A, he was hurt by someone in a hat, but most likely it's they can't read how sweet your face is.
I got a pretty sweet
you
face.
You do.
Not really at all.
The dog can't tell what's what. But also, our dog is just weird. So there's no telling
your
why
dog
he barks.
Is a little bit neurotic.
He's
perhaps.
So neurotic. He needs, you know, he's going on medication. Did I tell you that?
No.
Oh, yeah. He'll be on some kind of medication soon.
Like anxiety?
An anti-anxiety, a little Xanax
really?
For dogs. Yeah.
Little angel bear.
He can't not doggies be pet. Xanax. So if you're not petting him at all times, he goes, he makes a mooing groan.
So he's needy.
Yeah.
He's a needy
he
guy.
Needs help. So anyway, we took a family walk. Okay. And what else did I do? I watched a little true crime. We watched a little true crime and to get ready for tonight.
Yes, because we're going to be talking with author Tori Telfer about her book Lady Killers, all about female serial killers.
She's like my dream come true.
Deadly women.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be exciting. So that's what I did. What'd you do?
I went to the Fight for 15 rally, and I like to go to anytime there's an event like that, I like to go and get audio interviews, because the first time I ever really covered a protest was in the early 2000s under the Bush administration. And I was really disillusioned because a lot of people were like, I was like, the question I like to ask people is, what brought you out here today? And at that time, there were plenty of good answers, but a lot of people were like, this is our Vietnam. And I was like, what? You don't even know why you're here. You just want to be part of something. And that's valid. But I thought, that's a bummer. And so I've been going to anytime there's any kind of, big protest activity for anything, really. I try to go and I ask people, I try to aim for at least 10 people. And I ask them, tell me your name and what brought you here today. And then I try to get some audio interviews with event organizers if I can, and just kind of make these little vignettes of all these different.
And you put them on the Twitter?
I put them
on the Instagram.
Yeah, I put them on social media. I put them on SoundCloud. And anybody that follows me, I'm at Amy Guth, GUTH, on every platform. So you can just find them there. But I got a lot of really good audio today. I had a really, Reverend Jesse Jackson was there, and I had my recorder and I just walked up to him and talked to him. I had a great conversation with him, but he was in kind of a wind tunnel. So the audio is not good, but I did get one little clip of
him.
That's
fine.
Saying something nice.
I'm glad you got the one. And
because he had really beautiful things to say. But then when I listened back, I was like, man, he was standing in the wind.
And there's no way to like clean it up.
I tried. I got it. Sort of far, but not really.
Okay.
I talked to former Governor Pat Quinn. He had some great things to say about the importance of remembering the purpose of Labor Day and making sure that the people are being paid fairly and have a living wage and all that. So, and then I just started talking to random people in the crowd, and I try to get a good range of people.
Sure.
There was a lot of young people there, but I talked to one woman who's been an activist for a labor activist for like 20 something years. And she said, and now in my retirement, I can just do it more. So
wow.
It was cool.
That's amazing. That's really fun.
So it's interesting going to all these events, and sometimes there are very different groups there. Sometimes you'll see a lot of them. Sometimes you'll see labor representatives there, but sometimes it depends on what the thing is for.
Where was it? Today?
This one started at a McDonald's at 18th and Ashland in Pilsen.
Okay.
And then it marched up to the Thompson Center and then up to the American Hospital Association on Wacker. So it wasn't far from here. And there was a lot of people and a lot of different unions, hospital workers and
nurses,
everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody was there.
Wow.
It was great.
Good.
It was cool.
That's a good Labor Day.
That's a good Labor Day. That's really what Labor Day is all about. So I went into that, and I was trying to get all the audio ready because I was going to share a little bit tonight.
Yeah.
I had so much because I had so many good conversations with people.
It sounds like you really went for it. and got them.
That's one of my favorite things to do. I love to just walk up to a stranger and strike up a conversation. And luckily, you know, the job that we got, we get to do that.
We do get to do that. Ask them questions.
Yeah. So I just walk up and say, hi, Amy Guth from WGN Radio. Can I ask you a couple questions? And I only had two people say no. I usually don't get many that say no.
Because if you're, I mean, I guess people might be scared or whatever. But if you're at a rally like that, a lot of people are brave to begin with. Do you know what I mean?
Right. It depends on what it is. I mean, there was like an immigration rally that I was really careful about because some people were like, I don't want to be on the record.
Yes.
I'm like, I get it. That's fair. This one person said, I would love to, but I'm really shy.
So
I said, it's okay. I said, I'll tell you the three questions I'm going to ask you. And she was like, oh, I'm really scared. I don't want to do it. I said, okay. I'm not going to pressure you.
No,
into it.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to force people.
And then the other guy, I said, hi, my WGN Radio. Do you, you want to answer a few questions about why you're here today? And I cannot repeat what he said.
Oh.
Because he just said, I don't talk to the media because the media doesn't show up to things. And I was like,
but I'm here.
Literally here right now asking.
Am I not the media? Fake media? What's going on here?
I was like, what are you talking about, sir? Anyway, so I just kind of laughed and walked off.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it takes all kinds. Meet all kinds of people, probably.
You really do. And so I talked to all kind of people and had some great conversations. And I mean, it's interesting for such a focused event as this one. And, you know, it's all about labor, the labor movement and fight for 15, meaning $15 an hour is minimum wage. You would think something that focused, as opposed to like the Women's March, right? Even at something that focused, I got such a wide variety of answers when I said, what brought you here today? Why was it important for you to be here? A wide variety of answers, which is cool.
Do you like that? I was wondering, like, if you think that in terms of organizing and stuff, it's better to have a focused thing, or are you always going to have different people for, and does it matter?
I don't know that it matters. I think as long as everyone's clear on why they're there.
Each person's clear on their own their own reasoning.
I think it is important to show up if you believe strongly in something. You know, if you feel like, hey, here's my rule. If you catch yourself going, I am mad about this and someone's got to do something about it, then that someone should be you.
Yes. I have it never in my life done that until this year. And I just was sitting at home and during one of these events and I thought, I'm here with my crock pot. I cannot be doing this anymore. I am
my crock pot.
You know what I mean? Like, what am I doing? No. Right. Get in the car and go.
Yeah.
So I did.
Yeah.
You gotta do what you gotta feel. What you feel is right.
Right. And I try to go to as many of them as I can. I mean, sometimes I'm just on the air and I can't go.
Right.
But I try to go to as many as I can. And I think it's important, and here's what I've noticed ever since the executive order on travel.
Yes.
I was at the airport that night.
Me
I was
too.
On the air and then left and went right to the airport. And I was asking people, you know, what brought you here tonight? And again, got a wide variety of answers. I mean, they were a little more focused at that one. But I thought it was really interesting. Excuse me. Cause that night.
That's okay. Amy's going to choke to death. She's going to be okay. She's
I'm
okay.
To death. I'm good now.
She's good.
But that night, one young man said, you know, I'm so touched. He said, this really is mostly impacting my community, but all these people are here. And it, even when they don't have a stake in it and it wouldn't affect their family who I'm waiting to fly, you know, I think he said his aunt was flying
coming
in and he was like, she's stuck somewhere and I don't know where. I don't know what airport she's in, but she's stranded. And look at all these people that are here, even though they don't have a stake in it.
Right.
And I think that's really important to do. I think it's important to show up. If you think something is nonsense, show up.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't affect you.
Right. Because if you're sitting, like you said, if you find yourself sitting at home and you feel terrible and you're angry and yet you do nothing about it, that helps no one.
Exactly.
It doesn't help you.
Which is why I have been railing and railing and railing against the phrase, I can't even.
You know what?
I can't even with I can't even.
You know what? I agree. Because we can't.
Well,
and you have to, and you do.
And here's the thing. I was like, look, there's certain groups of people that would love to exterminate me and my people.
Yeah.
Like, I'm Team Hanukkah here.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that is the case whether or not I can even or not.
Well, here's the
thing. So I think it just feels so privileged to be able to say, oh, I can't even, or I can't deal with this right now. I believe in self-care. Know your limits. If it's overwhelming you and upsetting you, I get that. But generally, like, oh, I'm worn out by this. I'm like, that's very privileged to be.
Well, it's also, it's also like, could you stretch a little? Let's grow a little here.
Right. Like, I'm sorry it's inconvenient for you that your timeline is filled with things that are freaking you out.
Let's pull it out for the people.
Some people don't get the option to can't even.
Yeah. I mean, democracy, you know. we got to fight for it. We got to protect it, to me, whatever that means to you.
Yeah. Here's my PSA for tonight.
Yeah.
As the DACA announcement happened, you know, yes. It has not officially happened, but Politico had a story yesterday that said, according to two unnamed sources,
tomorrow, right,
that it was going to happen tomorrow. And immediately a lot of people kind of got really upset.
Which is the Dreamers Act, if people don't know. Yeah.
And so here's the thing I started noticing that I think is really not cool. I was seeing people sending tweets asking other people, oh, hey, how do you feel about this? But in effect, kind of calling people out.
Yeah, outing people.
Yeah, outing people who might be impacted by that. And I'm just like, that's not... however you feel about
that's a personal thing.
Like, I don't think it's cool.
No. Well, that's the thing with social media.
Stitches is what I say about that.
Or just like pipe down. Just talk from your own experience. That's what I like. I like
you talk do
from
you. Yes. I'll do me.
Exactly.
Everybody will be fine.
Exactly. Keep your hands off the Twitter. Don't do the Twitter.
The Twitter's great. Just be cool.
Be cool.
I went out of my way to go find this guy who I saw. He was schooling somebody. This guy said something that was inaccurate. And the guy was like, hey, actually, here's the deal. And he spent three tweets doing it, but not an ounce of snark. Just love and kindness. And here's the accurate information. And anyway, thanks. Have a great night. And that's how we ended it. And I went and found him. And I was like, you handled that so kindly and beautifully. And I appreciate you for doing that. Because...
Yeah.
It's so easy to be like, well, actually, idiot, it's
It's so easy. And on social media, wow.
Because you don't have to look at another human being's face.
You don't have to look into their eyes.
That's right. All right. I'm going to take a break. Okay. We're going to do this. We're going to go on break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with an author here in a bit. And I'm real excited.
I'm really excited,
about female killers. Light uplifting stuff. But it is really interesting. Any kind of history stuff is so interesting to me.
I love the history.
And you like the crime stuff. So this is kind of the perfect book for us.
Yep.
Anyway, Tori Telfer is going to be in. We're going to be talking with her. It's going to be awesome. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth. Jen, somebody was a school in me on Twitter saying that all this time I'm rude and a bad friend because I've been saying your name wrong.
Oh my God.
And he was saying you're wrong to say...
Were you calling me... Were you saying this is...
I pronounce it Smith.
Scarlett Johansson? What's going on?
He said, you're wrong to say Bosworth. And he put like several Z's. B-O-Z, Bosworth. It's Bosworth. It's like a snake slithery hiss noise. And I was first of all, she's sitting right here, you guys. She's right here. She would say, like, if you said, hey, it's Amy Guth, I would be like, yo, what? Why are you saying that to me?
Yeah, it is... You are correct. It's Bosworth. It's not Bosworth. And also, I have to be honest, like, I know I should have pride in my name. I sort of don't care. Like, let me tell you something. If it was mean, if you were like, Jen, whatever, Worth, bad word, I'd be like, yeah, that's not cool. But like, it's a matter of pronunciation that, you know, could be either way. So it is Bosworth. You have been correct. And that person, thank you for sticking up for me unnecessarily.
Getting in a Twitter fight for small detail.
What I suggest is maybe, I don't know, maybe look at your hobbies and see what's important to you. No.
Or that guy?
That guy.
Oh, I was like, what?
You have hobbies and you...
I don't.
That is not true. I can name your hobbies.
What are my hobbies? Like, everything is a huge project.
No. You also have hobbies.
Okay, what do I... I mean, I do Fight Club. I've gone skydiving once.
So what? It's now a hobby.
Okay.
You've done it once. Cooking?
Sure.
Okay.
Former career turned thing I enjoy.
Right. That's a hobby.
Okay.
Okay. So don't tell me. I know what your hobbies are.
I feel like I don't have, you know, but like people that have hobbies are like, oh, Saturday, I'm going to spend the whole day.
No, that's weird.
Building model trains. And
that's
no.
Just an organized
I
doer.
I slide into yoga.
That's a hobby.
For 90 minutes so I don't punch people in the face.
Well, that's a hobby that leads to good mental health strategies for everybody.
It's true.
So anyway, you do have hobbies. So my name is, you've been pronouncing it correctly.
Thank you.
Yeah. Clearing that right up. Let's talk a little bit about Irma, Hurricane Irma.
Yeah,
just because this is a breaking story. And it's important. So the path is uncertain, but it's threatening, obviously, the United States and it's, and also,
Do we have a sense of when landfall is supposed to happen?
They don't know. It's as of Monday, it's 490 miles east of Leeward Islands.
Okay.
I don't know. You know these islands. I don't know what this is.
I mean, I don't own one of them, but I kind of know where they are generally.
Okay, so, yeah. And then it's going to, then it might hit Puerto Rico and then obviously Florida. But, landfall is expected early Wednesday on the island of your favorite.
Anguilla?
Yeah,
oh,
Anguilla.
Man.
And it's supposed to be a category, if it keeps going the way it's going, it's going to be a 3, 4, or 5. That's kind of
a
wide
range.
But they will know more.
I will do
tomorrow.
Anything between give you a paper cut and punch you in the face.
Yeah,
stab you.
And they've already declared emergencies in Florida, obviously the islands, and the island of Puerto Rico.
Well, my hope is that it loses steam quickly.
Me too.
As soon as it
Me
hits
too.
Landfall, if not before. My fear is that, you know, that little swath of land, like from the base of Florida to the Caribbean island
sure.
edge, that's just kind of a weird area. The Gulf water is so warm right
okay.
now. My concern is that it's going to hit those waters and do something weird. And, you know, I
do
would,
something unexpected.
Well, I would just hate to see even the slightest bit of weather system move into anywhere between, say, you know, Houston and
yeah.
New Orleans. It's this area has really gotten beat up.
It said Irma could be especially intense because it's a classic Cape Verde hurricane, meaning it's formed in the far eastern Atlantic near Cape Verde Islands before. And they frequently become some of the largest and most intense hurricanes. So we're going to just send, we're just going to hope. We're going to hope that it lessens. I mean, that's all we can do and hope that people are okay.
Well, we're going to keep an eye on it. We're going to keep updating.
Let you know if something happens.
But yeah, I do worry about that area. I mean, it's hurricane season.
It is.
And everyone who lives in those areas, you know, knows how to prepare for them. But on the heels
Still.
Of, you know, on the heels of something as catastrophic as Harvey has been, and that it swung back around and made landfall a second time
yeah.
and put all that water in that
it was
area.
So long. Right. Like, I mean, it went, came and then went and came again. But then didn't it stick around like longer? Don't usually when they hit landfall, forgive my hurricane ignorance, then they dissipate. But this one kind of lingered. Is that what
Well,
happened?
I think it was just I don't know. We should call Skilling for sure. But
Skilling, if you're out there.
I do. We follow each other on Twitter, but I don't have him on speed dial.
Okay.
But it seemed like it was such a large a large storm system
right.
that with the bands that come off of it, even some of the bands just by themselves
Got
were dangerous and had so much water in them.
Man.
So.
All right.
Well, so we're going to keep an eye on Irma. Of course, we'll always be updating you at the top and bottom of every hour with weather, news, all that good stuff. But we're going to take a break, get you to news. Back in just a bit, Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth in for Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. Woo! 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth.
Oh, Jim Croce. I love Jim Croce. Hi, it's Jen Bosworth. I love Jim Croce. My husband loves Jim Croce.
Okay, I got a story about this song.
Bad, bad Leroy Brown?
True.
Okay.
So
I love this song.
I was in one of Chicago's, you know, iconic blues establishments
okay.
one evening.
Okay.
This was probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
And this guy walked in, and I mean, he made an entrance. He had the suit, and people looked at him like people knew he, like, I saw this guy walk in. I was like, this guy's famous.
He's
I don't
someone.
Know who he is,
yeah, yeah.
But he's a big deal. And he, but people were, you know, acknowledging him and moving out of the way and saying hi.
Wow, he was
and
a
I
high
was
roller
like,
kind
this
of
this guy.
Situation.
Yeah, and he had quite a suit and like quite a fancy
get up
shoe uh-huh. situation, and he was really fancy. And so he came in, and I was with some people, and I was like, "Who is that?" And they were like, "Oh, that's Leroy Brand." I was like, "Come on!" He claimed that he was, and he ordered. Well, actually, he did not order. One of his handler people. Right, you're Leroy Brand, you don't order your own cocktail, ordered a drink for him. But he was standing there, and he looked at me, and he called me a hot pepper.
Oh, that's nice, a hot pepper. I was thinking it was gonna be something bad.
Thank you,
that's kind of nice. I'm gonna start calling
like
people
he didn't follow up on it. He wasn't trying to, you know,
he wasn't like weird about it.
No, he wasn't trying to pick me up. He was just like, madam, you are a hot pepper. And I was
like that,
thanks
Leroy Brown. Man, do you know?
Way with the ladies in the whole town.
Jim yeah. Croce was like, 29 when he died. He looked like he was 65. So he had the look of a like an older dude.
You know, the rock and roll lifestyle.
I think he was born looking like he was 50. I mean, the thing is, I was like, oh, he must have been in his 50s. He was in his 20s. And then got in the plane crash. Never getting in a plane again. Anyway,
that's not even true. You totally will. You're going to have to.
I will.
The world awaits you, Jen.
The world awaits me. Anyway, I like the choice in tunes.
Yeah, give it up for Tom Hush.
Tom Hush,
playing all the good songs.
Esteemed producer.
Okay, I know that we have to talk about a charitable organization.
Yes,
follow
really
up on a guest that we had the other night, and I know we got to give an update on that. But just now on the break, okay. You look at your phone, and I subscribe to a lot of different, news like wire feeds, and
sure.
I'm looking at all the breaking news and all the stuff, and then all the not so breaking news and all the.
Bash your head against the wall.
Although, why does this exist? Sure. Why is this taking up space on my phone? Tell me I didn't use any of my data for that.
Right.
So, I'm in the camp of why are the Kardashians famous?
Uh-huh.
I'm still in that camp. So I'm just going to mention this quickly.
Okay.
Because I both don't care and am dismayed by this.
Sure.
It's that.
Hit me.
Okay. 21-year-old Kendall Jenner.
First of all, she's 21. She should be not in the news. Go ahead.
And unless you're like an Olympian.
Or you've discovered cures for things.
At 21. Sure.
Could've.
Okay. 21-year-old Kendall Jenner has been crowned fashion icon of the decade by the Daily Front Row, which is
a fashion insider
publication. Right.
Okay.
But
no.
The story here. Okay. So they had to give a statement. The Daily Front Row has given a statement in defense of this already because the uproar immediately was like,
who crowned
are you
them?
Joking? The Daily Front Row.
Crowned her. Okay.
Crowned her the fashion icon of the decade, which I don't think so.
No.
I disagree with that.
Look, if I would sooner be the fashion
icon. First
of
all, how
of
can you be an icon of anything if you're 21?
Second of all, shouldn't you be some kind of designer or like... have some style?
I think
know.
You need some years on you to be
yeah,
an icon.
Yeah, I really do. Princess Diana, icon.
Yeah, because she
Iris,
is iconic.
What's her name? Icon.
By definition, like you have to, in order to be iconic, it has to be like...
Iconic is a...
recognized
yes,
and
long,
established.
Yes.
And I'm like, isn't she the young lady that everyone freaked out about the plastic surgery? I don't even keep all the Kardashians
I don't know what...
straight.
I can't even either, but I know that she's the model.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's that.
So anyway, here's my thought on that. I have one thing to say on that. And that is, the other day I had a mouth allergy.
Okay.
And my lips blew up. And I looked, and my husband goes, you look like you had collagen implants. And I said, do I look like one of the Kardashians? And he didn't know who that was, which makes me happy.
That's good. That's a
but
good
anyway,
man.
Not really. Maybe he was just pretending. But anyway, that's all I have to say on that. And she's not an icon in my book.
I just think
nope.
I just think you cannot.
You're 21.
You're 21. You can't be an icon of anything.
No.
And second of all,
I mean, look, mom jeans are in. I get it. She can really rock a pair of mom jeans. I would not do that because
I would not because I cannot.
Well, I can't either. But she, you know, okay, you rock. But what? I guess it's like what makes someone an icon, and I'm not sure she fits the criteria if we look up the definition. But this magazine must think so. They really must believe in her.
I think it's one thing to just say, here's a person with a lot of style. She takes a lot of fashion risks, I guess, is sort of something.
Oh.
I don't follow her that well, so
I don't
really know much about
fashion
her.
Fashion risks?
I just recall there being an uproar when she had some plastic surgery.
Okay. Fashion risks. Yeah, maybe she does. I guess I don't quote
I mean,
follow
I would
her
even enough. Say, why would you reward somebody who's having so much work done by 21?
21 is very young. I don't even think your face has stopped growing.
No.
Your bones haven't connected in your head or whatever, like babies.
You still got the soft spot.
You still got the crown, cradle cap or whatever.
I mean something.
Yeah, anyway, the point is, yes, that is weird news. And also, they defended her by saying what? Like that just that she took risks? Is that what, like she took fashion
risks?
She's
this bold fashionista that takes risks.
Man.
And look, I think, you know, sometimes we roll our eyes and say, oh, fashion is such a dumb topic and it's light, but I think it can actually be quite interesting.
I mean, I like fashion.
I think there's a social component
yep.
to it. If you look at like the things that prominent women especially have how they have influenced that. It's usually a woman in a political.
Yes, or like a Annie Hall in a movie. Yeah. You know, that outfit. Iconic. That's iconic.
Often it's a response to something social.
Yes.
Right?
I'm going to wear pants. I'm going to wear suspenders. I'm going to wear ties was a lot of, you know, like the workwear. Women saying, no, we're wearing pants too, you know? Like,
right. And even, deal. I think even as attitudes in workplaces change, like that's when we saw shoulder pads change.
Yes.
So it's like, I don't need to pretend like I have masculine shoulders. Yes. I can just, I'm going to
be who I am.
Be who I am in the workplace. Oh, yeah. God, I hope the shoulder pads don't come back. They kind of are coming back.
I cannot wear them. I already have huge shoulders.
I do too.
I look crazy in shoulder pads. I look like David Byrne in Stop Making Sense. You know, he has that huge shoulder. That's me. I can't rock that. But I mean, I could, but it's a little too much for my own liking.
I'm just against them in theory.
You're not a fan.
I'm not a fan. I got to give you an update.
Oh.
Because we had that guy come on the show on Friday.
Yes.
Who was so awesome, Mike Kincaid.
Yep, Mike.
Who is the organizer of Peace Fest from iGrow Chicago, which is such a lovely organization.
Totally.
I was so excited to have him on the program and to meet him. He's such a nice person. So he was saying that for Peace Fest, which is if you go to igrowchicago.org and look it up, it's like an old fashioned block party to bring the community of Inglewood together for a joyful day. And there's health screenings and there's school supplies for kids.
Food, healthy food, everything's free.
Everything is free. It just sounds like such a positive thing. And Mike is such a positive person. And I was so excited. And we asked him a couple of times, you know, what do you need? And he was saying, oh, if you want to donate, go to the igrowchicago.org website. And there's a couple ways to do that. But I kept pressing him, like, is there anything you need? I feel like,
yeah, like, you know, what can we do?
I don't have Oprah money, but I want to do something. So he said there were school supplies were needed, diapers were needed, soap, toiletries, things like that to make sure that everybody has everything they need. You know, you got to take care of people's needs for, you know, nobody can be their best selves if they don't have.
No, you need, there's basic things we need.
So I decided, you know what? I know a lot of people. I'm going to make that work. And I just started telling people, and I put a thing on social media, and I was like, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the store and get what I can. And then if you can do the same, give me a shout, and we'll coordinate a time. And so I've started this stockpile in my house, and people are dropping stuff off.
That's so cool.
I'm super excited.
So cool.
So I have a whole bunch of school supplies that have been dropped off. I have good amount of diapers, but probably could use more. A good amount of, like, body care stuff.
Yeah, personal hygiene.
Deodorant and some soap and some lotion and things, toothbrushes, things like that. And then someone today brought tons of baby clothes. Including Little Activists is a line of baby clothes that is so adorable.
So cute.
I'm going to have her on the show at some point. She is such an interesting person, and I would love her to talk about this organization. They're so cute. It's a fairly new company, but it's little onesies with these kind of
so
fun,
cute
little sayings that have kind of a political or a activist-y,
like a
kind
social
of,
justice-y.
Yeah, like one said revolution, yeah. And the words love was kind of lit up. One said good vibe tribe or something.
Yeah,
like
that. It did.
It's really cute.
So cute.
She donated a bunch of onesies. And so it's like my living room looks like
A Target exploded. I was gonna say. So yes, I'm going to go to one of these discount stores,
sure,
and buy things, and you should too if you're so inclined. And then I would say too, yeah, you can find me on the old Facebook if you want to. I'm in the north side, so maybe if people on the north side want to donate these things,
yeah,
they can direct message me.
You get north side, I got west side.
Yeah,
we'll get it figured out.
But yes, please, this organization is really cool. They also want people to come from other neighborhoods to the block party to Peace Fest because they want to include everybody. They're welcoming,
and they want to really show that there's, you know, there's one narrative of Inglewood,
right,
out there. And the truth is, like, all over the city, we have people that are, you know, that just want to live their lives,
yep,
raise their kids,
be good to each other.
Yeah. I mean, let's recognize that every neighborhood has its challenges,
yes,
some more than others. But nonetheless, like, there's kind of this one story we always talk about with Inglewood.
The news can really, or the media can really focus in on that.
Come on now. We're right here. We're listening to you. I can hear you, Jen Bosworth.
I'm just saying, let's change the narrative.
Well, but let's also acknowledge the role of social media in a media
cycle. I guess that's what I
mean.
Like, yes, right.
Because, you know, it's not news to say everything was peaceful in so-and-so's neighborhood
today.
That's true. It is news if someone is killed or injured or whatever.
That's true. But I guess it's right. The story that comes after it, like the judgment of, and this always happens there.
Exactly. That's where I think social media takes over and people like start tweeting and say, oh, this is what always happens in this neighborhood or this neighborhood.
Yeah, you're right. It's a commentary about the news.
Because
right?
we see the opposite often, like there was a string of sexual assaults happening in the North Side, I think one or two summers ago. And I clearly remember on social media, people were like, that's horrifying. In this neighborhood, I was right. like, you guys, assaults right. happen everywhere,
all the time,
over the city.
Unfortunately.
And let's think about how we're talking about this. And
yeah, it's true. It's the way in which we talk about the news.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the hard facts of the thing.
Right. Thank you. All right. We're going to take a break. Coming up here in a little bit, we're going to be talking with an author. We have an author coming in. I'm really excited. We're talking with Tori Telfer, who wrote all about history, but not just any history. She, in particular, wrote about female killers. Very uplifting stuff, but kind of cool.
Because
we're
cool.
both into
we're,
true
I'm into
crime
that.
Stuff.
Cool so and creepy.
It's going to be fun. All right. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth in for Justin Kaufman.
I like this song too. Hush never disappoints.
No.
Isn't this the song that says James Brown? James Brown. That's what I remember about this song.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, James Brown. When's Chuck Mangione coming out?
I'm just going to let you sit there and
is
sing as long as
you want. Is Chuck Mangione... Oh,
wait, did
alive?
You think coming on? Like, did you book him on the show?
I tried. Look, I've tried. I'm still hoping. Every night, I hope. I put it out there to his people a couple times. I'm hoping he'll just walk by, and then we'll do a Steve and Johnny, like when Steve and Johnny came on, and they'll just walk by, and
that
we'll be
so
like,
cool.
Chuck. Except I don't think I would recognize Chuck Mangione, so that probably wouldn't happen. But the point is, I want to hear the music. I want the
like
music.
Like he just travels with his instrument all the time?
That would be fantastic.
You know he does.
I want to make a television show where it's just Chuck Mangione walking around the streets of Chicago with all of his tunes. And he walks into a local rate. I don't know. The point is, I like that song.
I know you loved Chuck Mangione. If I had an in with Chuck Mangione's people, I would use it to call him
Maybe
for
Steve
you.
And Johnny know. They're musician types.
We know somebody that has an in with Chuck Mangione.
Listen, Chuck Mangione, if you're listening, I want you to call me and tell me that you're going to come on our show. I really, that's my dream.
To interview Chuck Mangione.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't think you want to talk to him. I think you just want him to play Feels So Good.
I want to let him know that at the AM/PM grocery store, when I heard that song when I was five, it changed my life forever because I was like strutting down the aisle with my little bell-bottom corduroys. And I was like, yeah, doo-doo-doo. And I was like, yes, in the frozen food aisle. And I want him to know that that really shaped my childhood.
I think you should write him a letter.
Is he still with us?
Yeah, he's...
Okay, great.
He's 76 years old.
Oh.
Yeah. Alive and well.
Okay.
In the prime of his life.
In the prime of his life. I wonder where he lives. Oh, look. We have a gentleman making a heart symbol outside. Aww. Hi. Are you Chuck Mangione?
No.
Hi. Oh, no. Okay. that does... No. So anyway, what's going on? Did you look up iconic? What did it say? It said someone that, I don't know, someone that's not Kylie Jenner.
I'm busy looking at
Chuck Mangione.
Chuck Mangione now. Oh, well, we were talking about Kylie.
But there was, reality
Kendall
shows.
Jenner.
That's what it was. Like. Kylie, Kendall, Krista.
One of the Jenner children
Karma,
was named style icon.
Calandria.
Fashion. Chlamydia, whatever. Was named fashion icon of the
Chartreuse.
Decade. And I found that. A little appalling. So I was like, well, because I feel like by definition, you can't be 21 years old and be a fashion icon.
Not a fashion icon.
You have to have some, what kind of icon could you be?
Well, like Doogie Howser was kind of, but he wasn't even a child.
I'm going to say this. Okay. Let's give it to like Annette Funicello.
Yes.
Like she had this very all American girl thing. She was probably younger than 21 when she was in the Mickey Mouse Club.
Maybe Hepburn.
But she didn't have, you don't reach that status.
Jennings.
Hang on, David, I hear you. You don't reach the status of iconic while you're, it's like a memoir. You don't necessarily get to write the memoir right there when you're in it. You have to get through it and then later. Like
Annette, yes.
Looking back, you're like, oh, Annette Funicello.
She has nothing to look back on, is what you're saying.
She's 21. How can she? What do you want,
David? What do you want, David Jennings?
Isn't iconic simply, in this case, an extension of why are they famous?
Yes.
Because they're famous.
Well, she solved racism.
What?
Remember?
Oh, not that. Don't
tell
me about that.
Listen, she solved racism with Pepsi. Oh.
That's the soda commercial, which got yanked real fast because it didn't go over well.
And wasn't it played at some, speaking of that, some very important iconic event? That commercial came on during something that was Super Bowl-esque, if not the Super Bowl.
I don't know.
Oh, look.
But we've got a caller. Let's talk with him. Hi, Matt. You're on WGN.
Hello, ladies. I am making a giant heart symbol for you in my car.
Oh,
thanks.
I love
and
that.
Amy,
yes.
I love the Saturday Night Special. Oh. The one you did on chili sauce.
Yeah.
Or hot sauce was fantastic. Although I was a little afraid because halfway through you started gagging. I'm like, oh God, he's going to die on air.
I know.
Oh, God.
You should have seen the look on esteemed producer Tom Hush's face when I tried that very, very hot sauce made with the hottest pepper in the world.
Are you insane?
I tried it on the air. It was very hot. And Tom had this look on his face like, okay, I'm going to have to take the wheel right now. What's Goof going to do?
Goof.
Yeah, no, he was having a lot of fun with the music, by the way.
Yes.
I think that's how it gets the most kicks on your show, because whatever you're talking about, they'll find a song that makes
Tom Hush is a music genius.
That's true. He is. He's like an encyclopedia of music knowledge. It's true.
Now, Matt.
Yes, but you two are radio geniuses.
Oh, Matt, where are you?
Right now, I'm driving back from family dinner in Glenview.
Glenview. Oh, I'm an Evanstonian.
Oh,
that has nothing to do with anything.
I work in Evanston. I work with after-school kids in Evanston.
Hey, that's so cool. I'm a product of the Washington School, Nichols School, and ETHS.
Oh, I'm a product of Francis Parker, Deerfield High School, in Boca Raton, Florida, for college.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm so glad you called us. It's so nice to hear.
Yes, ladies. I await whenever you take over random shows. Because then I have the opportunity to actually call in and shower you both with
Matt,
Matt,
crying.
You're so nice.
I'm going to cry. And Goose is about to choke, but not from hot sauce, just from sheer emotion. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. That's really sweet of you to call. Have a great night.
Of course. Have a good night, ladies, and get the paddles.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Get the paddles for you.
Get the paddles, right.
I have paddles ready for Goose at all times.
Why?
In case you choke to death.
That's pretty likely.
Yeah.
That's probably, thing I'm gonna do. That's probably how I'm going to go. It's not even a joke. Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to get you to news. We come back. We are talking with author Tori Telfer, who wrote the book Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. I am so excited about this book.
Me too.
You're going to love it. She'll be right here in studio back in just a bit. Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth in for Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. WGN. Shout out to that song.
Shout out, I love. And I just talked about David Byrne with my shoulder pad. And
there
now
he is.
I've got a... Yep, qu'est-ce que c'est? Who knows? I'm so excited. I love him with a passion.
Indeed. And this song. 720 WGN, Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth in for Justin Kaufman tonight, hanging with you for another hour. And let me tell you why we are playing that fine song. It is because we have a very special guest in studio with us. And that guest is Tori Telfer, who wrote a book called Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. Please welcome her to the program. Hello.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Thanks for being here. So tell us about this book. Not only is it very beautiful, it looks like a work of art. The cover is so gorgeous.
I would like a poster of the cover.
Yes, same.
That worked last time we told someone that about a book. It totally worked.
Yep. I'll make it happen.
Okay, good. Well, it's a very beautiful book. And so tell us about it.
So Lady Killers is a book about historical female serial killers. The oldest one is from the 1300s, and it goes all the way up to the 1950s. So they're all kind of spooky vintage and all pretty terrible and fascinating.
Totally.
So why did you pick that topic, or did it pick you?
Well, I've always been interested in weird historical figures, kind of the deranged ones. I used to love Nero, the Roman emperor, and just thought he was hilarious, which no one else agreed with me on.
That's not necessarily a word I've heard to describe Nero. But
I might
sure.
go with wild.
Wild, out of control. But in terms of the actual book, it started as a column online, and that was kind of a prosaic. I just wanted to write a column. To me, writing a column was like the dream. So I pitched it, and it ended up with a hairpin, and then Jezebel, and then became a book.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so what was the process of getting all of this information and doing all the research and everything that went into this book?
You know, it was hard because it's 14 chapters and each one is a different time period, a different culture, a different country, different woman, obviously. So it was really like writing 14 mini books in terms of the research. Mm. I couldn't really carry much over from chapter one to chapter two, other than a general sense of like, this is what makes a deadly woman, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of library time, but honestly, so much is online now. I spent so much time going through newspaper archives online, which made it, you know, really easy. I don't know.
No more microfiche.
Yes. I did one session of microfiche and was like, oh, my back will never be the
Welcome
same.
Welcome to my childhood.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah. You online.
So a lot online. A couple of the women in my book, someone had already written a book about them, sort of some in-depth scholarly texts, which were great.
That's okay. There's room for all
okay.
of that.
Yeah, that's fine. No.
I took the academic stuff and kind of spiced it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, 14 different mini books, I would say. And it took me about a year to write. And then revisions were another like 6 months.
Sure. Okay.
You know, long process.
And were there themes that emerged between all of these other than female
and
committed homicide
and multiple murderess?
Was there like motivation that emerged as a theme, or were there maybe two in particular from different eras that really connected and seemed similar?
That's a great question. There were themes of sadness in their backgrounds. I got to the point where I empathized with all of them, which some people think that sounds terrible, but I mean, they didn't spring up fully formed with a knife in their hand ready to murder. They a lot of them had a lot of hardship. You know, I'll tell you a really interesting connection between two of them. So there are two uber rich ladies in the book. Most of the ladies are poor, but there are two who were just kind of, you know, the queens of their castle, one of them literally. And I really think they both went mad with power. So one was a Hungarian countess in the 1500s. The other was a Russian noblewoman in the 1700s. And they both killed their servant
girl. I know these people.
You do you know both of them?
I know the stories of both of them.
Nice.
Anyway, go ahead. They killed
no
all their staff.
The Russian
they killed
girl.
Their whole staff.
Whoa. They killed their staff. Real abuse of power vibes going on. And they were very like physically violent, which is pretty rare for female killers.
Torture situations.
Torture, beatings, nasty women. And both of them were kind of lonely. And I think, you know, they were just sort of the only ones in charge of these massive estates. Both of their husbands died. Anyway, they were so similar that I felt kind of strange writing about the one in the 1700s, because I was like, is this just sort of a repeat of her legend? But they both existed.
So you just said a phrase that I think was really interesting. You said that level of violence was rare for female killers. So is there, generally speaking, a different way that you see female killers committing?
Yeah, absolutely. Female killers love to poison. It's a cliche, but it is absolutely true. There's so much arsenic in my book.
Oh.
I had to actively try to find people who weren't poisoners just to spice it up. And, you know, the reasons for that are often interpreted in, like, a sexist light. Like, it's just easy. It's just easy to poison. But I think often it's because poison historically was already in the home.
Sure.
It was in cleaning products, or you could easily buy it at the drugstore.
Yep.
And women were also in the home. Women were in the kitchen. And it just made sense. It was, like, a clever way to kill.
Yeah. There's a lot of stories about poisons in milkshakes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you look it up, a lot of milk poisoning their husbands with milkshakes.
Oh, that's horrifying. Mm-hmm. Like Americana gone
like
wrong.
Yeah, like it's delicious strawberry milkshake and you're going to die.
That seems extra sinister because it's one thing like I'm handing you a glass of water.
No, this is like
that's
sweet.
Utility. But giving somebody like this is
a treat.
A delicious treat that's going to murder you.
I like it. I like it.
Okay. And so a lot of times when we think about women in history, sometimes they get very sexualized.
Yes.
Or the narrative sexualizes them later.
Yes.
How did that unfold as you were doing this research?
That is so true. That happened to every woman in the book. And it was interesting to look through old media, especially like I love old newspapers because they were often so sensationalistic. Obviously, the news is never sensationalistic these days. But it's obviously infuriating to see it happen, but it was also interesting to write about, very interesting to find these old rumors of these women's salacious sex lives.
Yeah, sure.
That was redundant. But and I noticed a lot of the reasons that society at large came up to justify their killings are linked to sex, even when that was not what was happening.
Everyone's turned into a black widow.
Absolutely.
Quote.
Or an insatiable...
Yeah,
you know,
nymphomaniac.
Yeah, or you know, she was frigid, or she was hysterical.
Oh, hysterical is my favorite label ever.
Oh, it's such a catch-all.
I know. And, I mean, and that one is one that still exists, right? Yeah. If you like share the littlest bit of emotion, okay, calm down there.
You're getting hysterical.
Whoa,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. Whoa,
hysterical now, lady.
Yeah, right. There's a academic named Hilary Neroni who's like a film scholar, and she has a quote I love where she basically says, "The media gets hysterical about female serial killers, you know, if hysteria is this overwrought, constant questioning and freaking out and not knowing what's happening. It's really like the media or society that's hysterical in the case of female murderers. It's rarely the woman."
That's so interesting. I mean, I think it is interesting when we think for as much as we say like women are hysterical and women this, like usually most of the killings are dudes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
you mean they're killing dudes?
No, I'm saying most murderers are men.
Yeah.
Like we spend a lot of time thinking about how like emotionally unstable women are.
I know.
Like,
serial killers are dudes.
I know.
Did all of the women in your book kill men or did they kill... Or you said some like
killed women,
handmaids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most killed family members. A lot of husbands were killed
Well, should have put the seat down. I mean,
exactly. But children too, and relatives.
Mm. Wow.
But I would say yes, like most of the victims are men.
Yeah.
I mean, and also
should put the seat down.
Well, also, there in my true crime
fandom.
Academic pursuits, whatever. The point is, when I watch them, a lot of times, I hate to say this, but the men have done bad things. I'm not saying they deserve to be killed, but I'm also not saying that they weren't jerks and abusive a lot of the times.
Right.
I'm saying both things.
There's two
sides to every murder.
Both sides were at fault, as someone recently said in a presidential platform.
Mistakes
were made on both sides.
Perfect.
Well, I mean, I do think there is an acknowledgement to be made there about there was just certain steps you couldn't take in certain points in history. You kind of were dependent on certain, like a marriage or your family or something. And if that was abusive or something was wrong, you could either kill yourself, you could kill the perpetrator, or you could stick it out.
Right.
Well, those are your choices.
Really, there was no recourse. It wasn't like you had advocates, you know what I mean? You were like, here we go.
Yeah.
I have three choices.
A lot of killing traps.
Yeah.
All right. We are talking with Tori Telfer, author of Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. Check this book out. We are going to continue this conversation in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Little Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds there.
Yep.
720 WGN. Amy Guth, Jen Bosworth, in for Justin Kaufman. We have a very special guest in studio right now. We have been talking with Tori Telfer, who is the author of Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. There's so much in that book title that I love. Love the history stuff.
Yep.
Love the true crime stuff. Not as much as you, Jen Bosworth.
Yeah.
But I also love the true crime. But you are like number one true crime fan.
I am. I love true crime. I've always loved true crime. I grew up on America's Most Wanted,
yes,
and Unsolved Mysteries, and those were my jams.
That was a good show. You know what I like?
So
I like Forensic Files.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Here is why. It is on late in the day, like right as you're going to bed. So it is like a nice cap for the day.
It is.
Because usually it is often a woman that solves it, and it's like nerds are winning because it's like science brings down the bad guy or bad gal. And it's like, so it's always a case of like this horrible thing happened, but science will prevail. Nerds are going to win. And half the time, more than half the time, that scientist is female.
It's female.
Yes. And so like I tell people that, and they're like, why do you watch that? So it doesn't give you nightmares?
No. It gives me hope.
It appeals to my overinflated sense of justice that nerds are gonna win and we're gonna be okay.
So criminal FBI profilers, the most successful ones are women.
Why is that?
Because when a woman goes into a profiler goes in to talk with a serial killer or a killer or a suspected whatever, they have a different approach naturally. I'm not saying they're nurturing. All I'm saying is the approach is different. See, they've studied this. And for some reason, it puts people more at ease. And so people confess to them.
Wow.
And whatever the reason, I don't know what the ins and outs are. All I know is the fact is they get more confessions from female profilers from serial killers than male profilers.
Wowee.
Yes.
I wanted to be a profiler.
That would be
problem
amazing.
Is, you have to jump over things because you have to go to the FBI training camp.
Oh.
I'm not jumping.
Like, what do you have to jump over?
You have to jump
like
over
body?
Walls. And
oh,
yeah, I've
no.
seen Silence of the Lambs.
I saw Silence of the Lambs. I know how this works.
Jodie Foster had to run. No.
She had to do way worse than that.
Yeah, she really did.
She really did.
Well, I'd rather be in a room with a serial killer than scale a wall. Anyway.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
You'd rather be in a room with a serial killer.
With a jailed serial killer or a free
jail,
random?
Jail. I'm not
so there's
totally.
Like bars between you and the killer.
But I'd much rather do that than someone say, hey, scale that wall. Anyway,
that'll
change.
It's
you're
going
to help me.
You're going to help me. We're going to scale a wall.
All right,
it's
back to the subject at hand.
Back to our special guest, Tori Telfer, yes. Author of Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. So we have many questions for you about this book.
Yeah.
So many, in fact. I'm very curious about, because leading up to tonight's show, I was telling people, ooh, I'm so excited. Here's who I'm talking to. This is what we're talking about. People went, oh, female killers, like, and then they would pause and they would go, Warnos, where, what's her name, won the Oscar, and then Lizzie Borden, and that was about it.
Yeah.
Do you get that a lot, that people can't? Like, why do we not remember female serial killers the way we do men?
I get a lot of, I didn't know there were even any. And I'm like, well, that's good for me, but bad for society at large. I think we don't remember them because I don't think they scare us the way that the Bundys and the Dahmers and the Gacys do.
Okay.
And I think, that's one of the reasons I think society as a whole doesn't remember them. Because when they're caught, when they're apprehended, people do get very into them. You know, people go into a fury and just can't deal and can't believe a woman could do it every time it's the same. How could a woman do this? But they do tend to kind of fold back into the mists after they're jailed or die or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's just that they don't stick into our imagination because they're not like the boogeyman, like the male who stalks, who rapes, who kills strangers. And I mean, it's like, okay, I get how someone who has heads in the freezer, like Jeffrey Dahmer, is like totally scarier than like the grandma who stirs arsenic into tea. But I also think that the grandma who stirs arsenic into tea is so much more of a... She's a different type of horror because she's the familiar thing that turns around and it's got like the devil eyes.
It's right in front of you.
Right. So in a way, to me, that is scarier than Heads in the Freezer. But we like the Heads
I
in the
get
Freezer.
That. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think the stereotype of women are supposed to be nice and then having a woman, you know, be nice and then kill you.
Well, it's an interesting tell, though, isn't it? Because I think we can, as much as we want, we can say, oh, we think of men and women in the same way. Mm-hmm. But that in particular is a really interesting litmus test because it does feel like some kind of betrayal. Like, oh, how could a woman do that?
How could she? Yeah, exactly.
We hear that even now, even in modern headlines, when something like that happens, you're like, how could a woman do that? That is a really interesting kind of tell.
It is. And when you're sort of telling people about what you're writing about and what are the reactions that you get? Like, are people...
People do get weird. one friend once scooted her chair away from me and I was like, you didn't have to. But people say, wow, well, how can you sleep? Isn't it just horrible to write about that? Doesn't it haunt you? And no, it doesn't. I mean, I think you understand as a true crime fanatic.
Well, yeah. I feel like we all have a bit, and this is a bit of a serial killer inside of us. I know that's not, but they're human beings. They're not monsters that come up from outer space or aliens. They're humans. So, like,
absolutely.
I think that's the part that really, like, it entrances me about, it's like, they are one of us.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not, they didn't come down from another planet to terrorize us. And so many of them have families and walk among us. I mean.
Yeah.
Right. We can't completely separate ourselves from the serial killer as much as we might want to.
Yeah. In most cases, was it a matter of like flipping a switch, being pushed too far, going past a boundary, or is it too broad to categorize?
If I was going to categorize it, which I'm about to do, I would say it's often a feeling of being trapped, which you were kind of mentioning earlier, like a feeling of desperation, of no options left. Which I don't say that to justify it because a lot of women feel trapped and don't serial kill their families. But it seemed like for many of these women, it was sort of this slow being crushed by, you know, husbands or society at large or, you know, some of them are from small, tiny towns back in the day. And you can just imagine for maybe an intelligent and slightly depressive young woman. I'm thinking of one in particular from the 1600s who is just kind of like a moody, grumpy woman. She was like all of us when we were teens. And I think she was a little bit of a psychopath and just kind of had a lot of thoughts and feelings and didn't know what to do with them. And her way out of what trapped her and annoyed her was just to kill, like, first her mother and then a coworker and then a lover who was getting on her nerves and then a husband. And
over what period of time?
5 years, maybe. Okay. Not too long. But she was trapped, you know, and she's from so long ago, but she's so relatable in a maybe creepy way because she was so moody and you can see through these ancient documents, you can just feel the intensity of her moods.
Yeah.
It's just really interesting to me.
Very, very interesting.
Totally.
I love it. You want to stick around? You want to hang out a little longer? I want to talk about writing stuff with you. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right. We got to go to break. We got to go to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit, we are talking with Tori Telfer, author of Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. We're talking about writerly things on the other side of news. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
I was 5 and he was 6. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground.
I cannot get enough of this song, Jimby. It's so good.
It's really... It's Twin Peaksy.
It's everything. This song is everything. 720 WGN. Amy Guth, Jen Bosworth, in for Justin Kaufman. We are having a fine discussion with Tori Telfer, our new best friend in the whole wide world, author of Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. Do not hesitate a moment. Go get yourself a copy of this book. It is coming out officially October 10th. So you got a minute, but you can pre-order that thing, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, go do that.
I have to say, you said that, Guth, and I swear two men took off running. I swear, they listened for a second, and then the guy ran away. I think he got scared.
If I had a dollar for every time a dude was standing outside of this window here in the Michigan Avenue Showcase Studio, and I said just like a regular old line from my show, and he took off running,
I mean, they look
I would buy
so
this place.
Scared.
It happens all the time.
I was like, no, we're not going to kill you unless you deserve. I mean, never mind.
Right. Never I know. Mind. No seriously, worries. Things that come out of my yes. mouth on this radio station, if it's a couple, it's fine. But if it's just like a pack of dudes, they will take off running like all the time. They're like, I'm not here for this.
Yeah, they're like, this guy looked scared and he ran off quickly.
So there's that. Anyway, the book is called Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. So I want to talk about the writing part of this. Sure. I'm especially interested in kind of the evolution of this book because, as you were saying, it started as a column, mm-hmm. really. Yes. And so when did you make the decision that this was going to be a book?
Well, I feel like sort of spoiled saying this, but right after the first column went live on the Hairpin, an editor emailed me and was like, have you thought about making this into a book? So the idea was planted in my head okay. very early.
That's awesome. That's great.
And I didn't end up working with that editor, but... And people liked the first column. Like, you're not supposed to read the comments, but I did, and they were all nice because it was all women reading the Hairpin. So I did have a sense that it could be a book, I guess, from the beginning.
Yeah.
I have a PSA about that. I have a very strong reaction to don't read the comments. Can I?
Yes,
can
yes
I
deliver please. It?
Here's the thing. I no longer subscribe to the don't read the comments thing.
Ooh.
Because saying that, I believe, is making us say the internet is terrible, and if we can't hang, we should, you know, if we can't take it, we should go, rather than saying, how dare somebody mistreat you or speak ill of you.
That's a great point.
So that is my...
It's a bit of denial going on, too, that...
Well, it's saying, like, this is normal behavior, and if you're not here for it, you're not allowed to do it and fully participate in your comment section, which is not to say it is not a terrible place.
Right.
I, too, am a woman on the internet and weekly get told to kill myself or something, so...
I don't even read the comments here.
Oh, I don't look at the text screen. After people started photoshopping my face onto porn, I quit reading the text screen. I'm out for that.
I don't even know what they do with me, but I have no time.
So I think it's perfectly fair to like I've written some really controversial things before and had a friend read and go, tell me if there's anything I need to weigh in on and I'll let you lead the comment. But you know, one time she was like, my friend was like, yeah, probably you could read these. It's fine. Like you're going to be mad, but it's fine. Another time she was like, for your own mental health, do not read this. Yeah. It's bad, which I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And then like a year later, sure enough, I read it and I was like,
yeah,
I will sink this city into the earth. Yeah. Like, I was so mad. But nonetheless, anyway, that's just like my little sidebar.
Well, the other thing is saying like there's an assumption. I feel like sometimes people think, oh, you can't handle it. If you read them, you'll. But, you know, I think
you might not.
You might. Who knows? But at least have the option. Yeah. Anyway.
You have the option. And also like let's police the behavior of the people that feel like they can talk. Let's such
deal
trash
with the real problem
such, right. yeah so deal with true. The real problem it's like when for a while there was like an app that was like Uber for women called Chariot. I was so mad. I was like,
Chariot?
What? Yes, rather than because they're like, oh, you know, women aren't safe in Ubers and all this so no, it was all women drivers and women in there and a woman, the drivers could refuse service if you like had a man with you if you wanted. So it was like, I was like, when has segregation ever been the solution to anything?
Yes, if we need this, we have an underlying problem let's address.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the same thing. It's like rather than saying, let's deal with these horrible perpetrators that we've allowed access to the public to do awful things to people in their cars. Let's just take the women folks somewhere else. Miss me with that is what I say.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Anyway, that's a sidebar. That is a tangent, but it is one I go on often. So, comments. Read the comments.
I read the comments, and they were nice.
Of course they were.
Great. And they were like, ooh, I'm drinking red wine and reading about this. And I was like, these are my people.
Who was the first killer that you wrote about?
Ursabet Bathory, the Hungarian countess from the
1500s. Oh, I've heard of her, yes.
Lots of legends around her.
She, bathed in the blood of people, right?
Allegedly.
But okay. Wasn't there some flesh eating, or no?
Lord have mercy.
So her people who helped her said that there was. That was extracted from torture, which, you know, who knows? So it's hard to tell. There's a lot of misinformation around her, but a lot of terrible details that could be true because they were confessed to by people who saw what she was doing.
Wow.
Yeah.
She was a bad one.
She was rough.
Yeah, she was into some stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So you read the comments and you're like, hey, they like me. This is good. This is a thing. And then at what point, how long had the column been around when you started to shift it and start to create the book manuscript?
I only ever wrote 4 installments of the column, and I probably got my agent around column number 3. So very quickly, I realized I couldn't do both at the same time. And I kind of wanted to start saving the really juicy serial killers for the book. So actually, all 4 of the columns are in the book, but updated, more research, better observations on my end. So yeah, I stopped after 4, and that was like 2 or 3 years ago.
I can't be bothered. I got a book to write,
yeah.
People.
You're like, people, I got a book.
Yeah, catch me in 2 years, fans.
And so what is your writing ritual like? This is my favorite thing to ask of writers, because I think everybody's got a thing that must occur prior to doing quality work.
I, too, love hearing how writers write, but I feel like I am so disorganized and don't really have a ritual, but I'm always trying to get one. Let me think if I had one during the book. I mean, I work well under pressure and under a deadline, and if there's like an editor who's maybe a little tense. You know, sort of the fear of God has to be in my heart before I really start producing. So with Lady Killers, it was just more, you know, maybe one day a week I would really get into the zone and really like go hard on this woman's life. Not anything too glamorous, though, I'm afraid to say.
That's all right. Sometimes, I mean, I love that. I love asking that question because the answer can be anything from on the back of an envelope in the parking lot of a grocery store, my kids are sleeping, right. Yeah. To I must have spring water and linen pants.
Crystals and things.
Oh. Right.
I mean, the answer pants. Just like yeah. can be anything, yeah. But I just love to ask that of writers because, and I think it changes for every project.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've absolutely. Interviewed people for the first book and then gone back and interviewed them later for like the 4th or 5th. And they're like, remember how I told you that it had to be like crystals pointed north and
right,
all this?
Right, pendulum.
Well, now I have 6 kids and now it's like, at 2 in the morning after I've had a pot of coffee and then I pass out.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But, yeah.
So I think it changes for your life and for the project.
Yeah.
So that That's brings me to my next. What are you writing next?
Oh, I'm working on this column that I really like, but it's behind a paywall.
Okay.
Which makes me so sad. But it's a column about the process of writing this book added. Like, it's like serial killers plus my life is the formula. Which is odd, but it's been working. And it's for Medium, has this new members only.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's kind of a publication. But so far I've written about like serial killers plus my background as a pastor's child. Serial killers and sex.
I'm sorry. You've been sitting here for 43 minutes and 42 seconds and you just added that detail.
Was this the... Should I have led with that?
That's pretty cool. So that's pretty cool.
That is an interesting footnote to this conversation.
Yes. So that was like a long therapy session to write that piece, but I was happy to get it all out onto the page or onto the website.
And so where does family support lie in all this?
My parents have always been so great with me wanting to be a writer, which is super chill. They've never blinked an eyelash or an eyelid or whatever. They've been a little iffy about the murder vibes, and they know it, and they read this essay, and we kind of cried over the phone. So they're very proud of me for having a book coming out, but I think there is some hesitation. But my thing is like, there's no acknowledging talking about violence. There's nothing morally wrong with that. No. It's not that my parents are saying there is, but I think a lot of religious people are very like, don't go there. Don't touch it. Don't poke the devil with a stick. And I'm kind of like,
The devil's around anyway.
Poke him.
Ask him questions.
He's not going to win. Yeah.
Interview him. Write a column about
him. Yeah. So, you know, there's some not really disagreements there, but maybe some vague
maybe
tension.
Coming at it from different lenses.
Fear. Right. I mean, I think people think if we talk about
fear.
Stuff, it's going to happen. Or or we somehow...
Yes.
We do.
It's going to be dangerous.
Yes.
If we talk about killings and or torture or something, then that means, you know, it's going to happen to us any minute and... Mm-hmm. And it's like, again, the denial factor.
I think it's the same thing that makes us like watch a slasher film and then put a chair in front of the door that night. Okay.
Right.
The odds of you watching a film about someone getting their head chopped off and you getting your head chopped off that very night are so small.
And if that has happened to you, please call us. If your head has been chopped up after watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre, please call me.
Okay. We have a thing, Tori, that we have done.
Yeah.
We name it and we get the callers. The best one ever. We said, if you own a hedgehog, give us a call. And this like adorable 6-year-old boy named Gavin called us and told us about his hedgehog named Fox. It was the cutest thing.
Anyway, so I put a shout out. But you're right, Goof. It's like the chances of this happening are so nil, but when it does, it's so scary that people are like, oh, no, it's catching.
Exactly. And I think by talking about it, you deflate it.
Yeah,
it makes it less scary.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, if you see these people as people that have problems and it's fascinating, but they're just people, then it's not so like, oh, my gosh.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, it kind of gives you some information for avoiding serial killers, dare I say. Yeah. You know, you sort of see the warning signs and you learn not to stay around the people who are clearly psychopaths.
Yeah.
You know, not to let your grandma put sugar in your tea.
If you are cheating on your husband or wife, probably don't let them serve you a pink strawberry milkshake. I'll be like, I'll pass on
They're probably going to murder
Say
you.
No to the milkshake.
Watch, Miles, my husband, likes to go to Steak and Shake. He'll be like, you want to go to...
Nope.
Not
no,
today.
I do not
today, Satan.
We're going. Yeah, right.
But alternatively, that's how you would get him, though. Like, if you needed to murder your husband, you would just take him to the Steak and Shake, and then it's done.
Why do I feel
just
like
chop his head off?
Why do I feel like this audio is going to be in a courtroom one day?
Exhibit A.
Now we call to the stand, Amy Guth.
I plead every fifth. I don't know anything. At all.
I know no one and nothing.
I don't know anything.
Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I love this. We're going to take a little break. We're talking with Tori Telfer, author of Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. The book comes out October 10th, but you can pre-order that thing right now, which I encourage you to do. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. We can't mention Elizabeth Bathory and not play the band
Venom.
Of her
oh,
same
is this the
name.
Band or the song Okay.
Anyway, it's Amy Guth and Jen Bosworth. We're in for Justin Kaufman, and we're talking with author Tori Telfer, who wrote Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. Please go pre-order this fine book right away. Not only is it a very styling cover
that
looks cool and vintagey, but it is fascinating.
I'd also like a t-shirt of this book cover.
Oh, t-shirts too. Well,
I'm into them.
I mean, the poster's cool for me, but if there's both, I want both of those things.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We're just letting you know the merch that you
We're
need to make
We're putting it out
for
there.
Us.
Maybe a coffee mug.
Sure.
A tumbler.
I would
How
walk
about an area rug.
Yes.
I would walk around with a coffee cup that said Lady Killers.
Yeah. There's got to be a band called Lady Killers. I would love
that. There's movies, plural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's that. Okay, so you have the book is officially out October the 10th. You can pre-order it now. I assume that you will be having many, many events to promote this fine work of literature. Tell us about
that. Yes,
them.
I hope so. So the launch party is going to be October 10th at Women and Children First in Andersonville.
Excellent bookstore.
Great bookstore.
Yes, so much fun. That's at 7 p.m. So that'll be fun. I'm going to try to get my friends to play creepy songs about killing your lover. And
as you do,
I'll just tell a story or two and we'll have some wine.
That'll be so fun.
I'm in.
I'm also doing a live podcast show thing, reading thing at Pilsen Community Books, which is
great.
In Pilsen and just the cutest, most amazing. So that's with I-94, which is Lumpen Radio's literature podcast, I believe.
Yeah.
And then something in L.A.
Great.
Oh, all right, great.
Because I love L.A.
Sure. I love it. Yes. That's going to be so fun.
That's going to be so cool.
I'll be at that thing.
Awesome.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah, I want to come too.
Please do.
Yeah, I want to hear all about that. I want to get the book, but I think I'll wait and get it at Women and Children First because I know.
The galley is missing a lot of information, so wait for the real thing.
All right. All right, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. Other books.
Yeah.
And then... do you already have the thing figured out that you're going to sign in the books? Some people write the same thing in every book.
You should.
No,
I want
I don't.
You to write in mine. I will kill you.
Okay. I want to write creepy things. Separate the chaff from the wheat of true crime fans.
My favorite one that's ever been signed for me, poet Jennifer Knox, who is very funny and awesome and full of life, wrote to me in her book, Drunk by Noon. She signed it to Amy. Good luck in prison.
That's great.
That's great. I was like, that's good. But like some people, I think Jonathan Safran Foer like draws sort of something with the first letter of your name.
Ooh,
so there's pressure. You
got
to come up with something. Okay. It's got to be your thing.
And I would like you to write that or I will kill you or you're dead to me.
Okay. That's
really good.
That's
you're dead to
me. That's really good.
Okay, good. Use that one.
That's perfect. Because if you're going to.
Do you want royalties?
No.
That was really cool.
It's a gift. It's a gift. We're givers.
As long as I get a t-shirt with the cover, I don't care.
And I get a poster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if there's ever a book you could sign, You're Dead to Me, I think it is. Yeah. Lady Killers, yeah. Deadly Women Throughout History.
The other thing is my friend Keith has a saying that would be good, and this is, this life will be the death of me.
Oh, that's amazing,
which makes
too.
Perfect sense.
Perfect sense.
You know Keith. Keith Ecker.
Oh,
Essay
yeah.
Fiesta. Anyway,
yeah.
Yes, this life is going to be the death of us, you guys.
Noted.
Okay, so we have hijacked your book tour. What you're gonna write? Okay,
this happens to us. Someone was on, and now we're that we liked was a filmmaker. Now we're in their horror movie
because we made some demands.
We made some demands. On her.
We're lucky in that.
We're lucky because we're nice, and people think we're sweet. And then we're like, "Oh, you're gonna do this for us?"
Oh, and we're really morbid. So where can people go to find out more about the book and you, and connect with you on social media and all that good stuff?
People can go to my website, which is you can either go to ToriTelfer.com, but I prefer if you go to Tori.gov.com. It's spelled out Tori.gov, literal dot.
D-O-T?
Yes, D-O-T-G-O-V. .com.
Okay,
it's
you're
just
making
like
it
a professional,
as easy as possible.
A professional thing I like to do.
Oh, okay.
So if you go there, you can see some blurbs about my book, and you can read my blog, and you can keep up with me on social media.
Marvelous.
Which I would love.
Great. Are you a native Chicagoan?
I am not, but I have been here from the age of 14 on, and I went to school up in Northwestern, and so
close enough.
Close enough.
Does that count? I feel
yes.
like it doesn't, but
well,
it does.
Yeah, it does in my book.
Okay.
You know
Thank
what
you.
I say when people say, "Are you a native Chicagoan?" Yeah. I say, "No, but I got here as soon as I could."
That's a great answer.
Because it is my home, and I have adopted it, and I'm here for keeps. Watch, some crazy thing will happen. I'll have to move to.
She'll be like, "I'm going to
guys,
Zimbabwe.
The Toad Suck Arkansas Gazette has recruited me to be the editor. I'm out."
Yeah.
Something. Who knows? Anyway.
I won't visit there, but
they have
you will.
They legit have a toad sucking competition.
Oh. Yeah, I won't.
Like,
I
you
won't
put
be.
A toad in your mouth, and
that
whoever keeps the
deadly.
Toad in their
well,
mouth.
I already have an allergic reaction.
Oh, you had the Kardashian mouth.
Kardashian
thing.
Mouth. Oh. Not right at this moment, but it'll come back. And I don't want a toad suck.
I also don't want to go there.
No. It's bad all the way around.
No offense to the fine people of Toad Suck, Arkansas and their Gazette.
No offense. To
anyway, so go to Tori.gov.com.
Or just ToriTelfer.com.
Or ToriTelfer.com.
Or you can put your name into a search.
The Google.
Yes.
Google.
Yes.
Just Google her. Tori with an I, Telfer.
Perfect.
And you can read all about the book, Lady Killers, Deadly Women Throughout History. The launch party, October 10th, right here in our fine city. Go there, meet her, say hello, get her to write You're Dead to Me in your book. It'll be good. Tori, thanks for being
Thank
with
you
us.
So
Thank
much,
you so Tori.
Much. This is so fun.
All right, back in just a bit, and then we'll get you to news here on 720 WGN. Jen, Tom's playing your song.
This is Jen B and Amy Guth filling in for Justin Kaufman, and it's Chuck Mangione, my guy. I have an obsession with him.
We once did an entire segment listening to this song, like, underneath it.
Heideman played it for
she
us.
She loves this song so much.
What was the segment about?
Elevator music.
It was about... It was
we were
just...
talking about, like, funny stuff we remembered
Kids.
From our childhood, and... In particular, we were talking about like a particular grocery store that
yes.
Jen remembered.
And so I have very fond memories of that song and the AM PM grocery store in Evanston.
And so you said something like, and it was just there underscoring the whole scene.
I'm
and
walking.
He potted it back up and it just stayed for like 15
and then I
minutes.
I did like a narrative about
corduroy
bell bottoms in the 70s and the AM PM.
As one did. Anyway,
hi
hello.
Guys.
That was fascinating. The talk about the serial killer stuff.
Oh my gosh, what an interesting book.
It's like one of my guilty pleasures is I cannot wait to read about the latest serial killer. I will go on Wikipedia and go down
that
the
sounds
rabbit
frightening.
Hole. Well, you know me. It's airplane crashes and serial killers,
gosh.
And I'm out the rabbit hole, and then all of a sudden my alarm's going off, and I have to go to work.
I'm totally with you in the same way.
It's terrible.
I love that kind of stuff.
Oh,
me
yeah.
Too.
I know. It's just the macabre of it all.
It is.
Especially the women that she was talking about. I feel like what was the latest one she said was like in the 1950s.
Yeah.
So there's a little distance there. So I think it's a little bit less, you know, sudden, immediate.
Sure.
You can make fun of something in the 13th century. It doesn't matter what it is, right?
It's kitschy in the 50s. Kind of cute.
It's real neato to murder your husband.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That was really in
throwback.
For sure. No, that was a very fascinating discussion. I absolutely want to buy that book. So
Lady Killers.
Really cool. Yeah. We got a fun show today.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people know that Labor Day has its many roots in Chicago. So we're going to be talking with a history professor, professor who is going to kind of set the scene for us, the powder keg that was Chicago through the late 19th century after the Civil War. I swear it's not boring. I just said that really boring, but I swear it is really fascinating.
He's going to bring it to life.
He's going to bring it to life about what was going on during that time. We're also going to have some food and drink, right?
Yes, from Bell Kitchen and Bar. Nice. They just opened in the Avondale neighborhood, and they're doing pretty much a Midwest-centric restaurant. So it's going to be
cool.
Juicy Lucy's, horseshoes, that kind of thing, which I'm really interested because I've never had one.
No. Yeah.
And I know you were from, where'd you go to school?
Downers Grove, University of Illinois, so a little bit further south. But I've been to Springfield. Brett's from Springfield, where the horseshoe's from originally. So never had one, though, so I'm excited about that. I know. I can't wait. What else? Oh, Esmeralda doesn't drink out of tap water out of the kitchen sink.
I do out of the kitchen, but not the bathroom.
Yeah. Is that a common thing?
It's a lot of people. People do that.
So if you have tap water, I'm so fascinated by this, that she will not go to the bathroom sink to pour water.
There's a lot of people like that. They think that it's dirtier in the bathroom.
I'll drink it out of a hose.
Because it's next to the toilet. It's because it's next to
not the bathroom.
You won't do it in the bathroom
it's
sink.
It's all rusty probably.
Well,
no.
Also, it's because it's close to the toilet maybe.
That's what
what I was thinking.
Right.
It's association.
So we'll do about an hour on that.
Yeah.
To lead off, to start off. We're going to push the history professor back a little
various
bit.
Various faucets.
It'll be a lot of fun.
What do you drink out of?
Yay. Yeah.
Call us and tell us about your plumbing.
Yeah.
Tell us about your piping. We want to know about your pipes.
7200. Yeah, okay. Well, thanks, guys. Good show.
Yeah. Good times. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you are an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.